to episode 4 of the season 4 of the Beach Business Breakfast Show. This morning we have Gavin. How are you, Gavin?
Well,
welcome to Merriweather Beach Surf Club's most successful podcast.
Yeah, ever. In the history of,
ever.
In the history of Merriweather Surf Club, which has been going since 1907. So, it had to wait for over 100 years to get its own show. And now we're an international sensation up there with the Kardashians, I believe. So, Gavin is one of our, you were at some of the really early ones, weren't you?
I think it was probably the second or third one. I remember, I think there were about six or seven in the first group.
Yeah.
And I was exploring the whole idea of business networking at that point.
Yep.
And I came along, I think you invited me, David.
Yep.
And in the meantime, it's just absolutely grown. I think there are now regular attendances of 40 to 50 people.
40 to 50, our record's 58, which was great. When we talk about the first one, Jeremy's at, I was at, Nathan, our previous guest, was at. There were six of us, and we're thinking, this might have been
very super successful.
Born
for success, we were, yes.
But then we, the second meeting, there was eight. So that's a huge increase.
Yeah,
25% or whatever percent.
We grew by 20% every month.
We've grown ever since. So I think the fact that it's informal, it's reasonably inexpensive, it's a great venue, it's easy parking. Everyone's here to try and help you grow your business, so that's what it's here for. So, Gavin,
Paragon Process Optimization.
Optimization. So we'll get to that in a moment. So just tell us a bit about the Gavin story. Like, are you a Newcastle local, or did you grow up here, or where did you?
No, I actually grew up in the United Kingdom.
Yep.
I immigrated here at the end of 2000. Well, I arrived in Australia in 2008, 2nd of January.
Okay. So whereabouts in the UK?
I was just west of London, not far from Heathrow Airport.
Okay, so, Reading or something?
Windsor, Langley, Slough.
Yeah.
That area
Slough,
there.
Slough, the home of the
where the Queen lives or something, isn't it?
Yeah. She was my neighbour.
Yeah. Windsor Castle, yeah, but Slough is famous for the office.
The office, that's right.
David Brent, the paper shop was from Slough, and quite a funny show. So you grew up there, and what did you do leaving school? What did you do?
I'd always been really, really interested, had a passion for cars, particularly motorsport.
Yep.
And even from 13, 14, I always knew I wanted to work with a racing team. So basically, close to where I used to live was the McLaren Formula One team in Colebrook.
So I kept knocking on the door.
Yeah. And which was pretty much unheard of in those days. That was back in 1976.
Wow.
Yep. And I was actually their first apprentice. And my first season there, I started in the August of 1976, and that was the year that, I don't know if you remember the film, just a couple of so years ago, Rush, about James Hunt and Niki Lauda.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the year I started at McLaren.
Oh,
so I was right in the middle of that.
Isn't
so I was
great?
when I saw the film, that really brought home memories of what it was like.
Cool. That's fantastic.
And I saw the business grow from literally working out of a couple of double garages.
Yeah.
So that's really as it became more professional.
Yep.
That's the start of that.
In those days,
did they mainly race around the UK, or did they race?
No, it was international.
It was still
international.
Yeah. But it sort of wasn't like as well. Like, I suppose everyone knew it existed, but it wasn't like what it is today, which is.
Absolutely, there wasn't the money there as such, and it wasn't a commercial sport.
Yeah.
And over the period, over the last 30 or so years, it's grown exponentially to multi-billion-dollar business.
It's amazing. Yeah.
It is today. And
so I suppose in those days, were the teams privately funded?
Pretty much so. Yeah. There were still major corporate big sponsors, but it was really you didn't know who was going to turn up for the race.
Yeah.
What which team was or wasn't going to be there?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just all of a sudden in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, three or four people got together and really pushed it into the business, and then it grew and developed into the business it is today. And so I saw a huge change from literally what was a workforce of probably 20 or 25 people to when I left McLaren in the end of 2007. Just in the racing side alone, there were well over 500 people.
Whoa.
Just keeping
And it's like massive technology, R&D, like there's a lot more to it than the racing car, right? Like
it's the forefront. Yeah, I mean, that's why the major manufacturers like Mercedes, BMW, Renault, that's why all the big Toyota come and go. But the big players, that's why they're in there. They can't. Yeah. It's almost as if they can't afford not to be in there. And there's a huge amount of innovation there. So what was on the racing cars this year, in 5-10 years, will be developed.
That competition pushes them to work on
the second technology. The difference between success and failure, isn't it?
Yeah, a second can be really, in terms of qualifying, can be the difference between the first number one on the starting grid to or you're halfway down or at the back, depending on the circuit.
So what apprenticeship did you do with McLaren?
I did it was a sitting guilds at the time, but basically an engineering workshop practices. That was a 4-year apprenticeship. So that was basically my grounding.
Yeah. So you spent what, 30 years there?
I was there for just over 30 years. Wow. Yeah. Okay. And when I left, I was managing the sheet metal fabrication department.
Yeah.
For the race car components. I led a team of 6 people.
Yeah.
In that area.
Yeah. So apart from the weather, why did you decide to move to Australia? What was that?
My daughter. She was born in 2000, and I wanted to be here.
Yeah.
I wanted her mother is Australian, my ex-partner, and I just wanted to be part of her growing up.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'd seen everybody moves on.
Yeah.
And I thought it was important. I'd seen the
huge change
in McLaren.
Yeah.
And the one thing I couldn't do, parents and friends, the one thing I couldn't do is get that time back with my daughter.
Yeah, for sure.
So I decided to basically set up and leave my job and emigrate. And
excellent.
And I'm so glad I did.
Yeah.
So they were living in Newcastle? Is that why you
Yes.
to Newcastle?
Yeah, they were living in Charleston. Well, they were living in Maitland, Charleston, and now they're in Charlestown. And they're in this area, so I basically knew this area, so that's why that was the draw card. That's why I came out here.
Yeah.
To be more of a dad.
Yeah.
Literally,
yeah, no, that's right.
Kilometres away rather than 10,500 km
away. Yeah, absolutely. So. Yeah. So you can only do so much over Skype and FaceTime, can't you? You've got to be there. So.
Yeah.
So Paragon, how long ago did you start that?
That was nearly 2.5 years ago. I started that business.
Yeah.
And it's a total sea change, a huge learning curve from being an employee for. I've been employed in Newcastle at Broad Meadow for 6 years. So combined with McLaren, and that's the highest 36, 37 years of being an employee to going out on my own.
Yeah.
And the journey's been absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And I think my worst day in my business is probably equal to a good day as an employee, if you to put it like that, as an employee at another company, and the learning curve and what you learn and it's very, very challenging.
Yeah.
But you know, when you network, when you go to these networking events, you realise just how there's some amazing people around, and you meet some fantastic people, and there is, and I've noticed there's a real desire to.
Try and help you succeed.
To help. But when you realise that, you open yourself up to want to do that as well.
Yeah.
And it's just a really, really good environment in which to grow, to learn about yourself, but also to learn about other people, and all to move together. You know, an army doesn't fight. An army's not one person or two people going off in different directions.
Yeah.
It's a whole group. It's a group of people moving together.
Yeah.
And that's what's been. That's just like an enjoyable part of business in terms of networking events.
Yeah, and you've got a pretty original skill set. I mean, in Newcastle especially, we don't have any professional Formula One racing teams. Like, it's not. Well, we don't have any
in
Australia.
Yeah. Yes.
So V8 is a different kind of kettle of fish altogether, I guess. But in terms of your experience, you're not going to bump into people that have come from that kind of higher level engineering. Performance management type of work, are you? I mean, it's
no, they're
pretty unique.
there are some of my ex-colleagues from McLaren are in Australia.
Yeah.
There's some in Perth, there's some in particularly Melbourne, because there's a lot of motorsport down there.
Yeah.
So in Sydney, so there are ex-Formula One people around, and you hear of them every so often, but I've not met any in
So it's quite a different background to, sort of, most of the people who are still living in Newcastle and employed here are not of thoroughbred racing car organisations, I suppose I would say, is a way of putting it. So how do you apply that background experience to what you're doing today?
In when I was in motorsports, the business was, I suppose when I joined, it was in its infancy, and a group of people got together and just did things, and they went racing every two weeks. As I said earlier, the business grows up. It had to grow up, because the more money it had to attract bigger sponsors, more money, and it had to get really serious, and it had to develop systems and processes to become more accountable.
Yeah.
And I think at that stage I saw that happening, and it really fascinated me. But also I saw, because everything changed so quickly in motorsport, it's very hard to actually, in terms of systems and processes, it was very hard to get, you never get in front of the game, but it still really, really interested me. And also, a classic example of how a process works in motorsport is in any form of motorsport, particularly Formula One and V8s, etc., is the pit stop.
Yeah.
Now, people see a tyre change, a car's come in, a bunch of guys run out, change.
Yeah,
the tyres, do whatever, change driver, do whatever they need to do in a very, very short period of time.
Hopefully in a short period of time.
One of them gets run over or set on fire.
But at the end of that, people see a pit stop, but the reality is, yes, it's a pit stop, but it's a process. It's an extremely well-defined process.
Yeah.
The cars come into the pits, they stop.
It's like
a group of people.
An amazing 4 or 5 seconds. Or
yeah, have the right, the right people at the right time with the right parts, and they've got the right process.
Yeah.
And that's how they can do it in Formula One.
I remember hearing that when an organisation has a similar thing, which is airlines, the plane lands, the passengers got to depart, you've got to do your checks, clean the plane, new crew on, blah, 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 that Qantas looked at Formula One racing and how they did a pit stop to reduce the time that a plane was on the ground. Because when it's on the ground, it's not earning money. So, it's quite... Transferable.
It is, absolutely. Even in the medical industry. Mm. So, I really love that.
Yeah.
So you can transfer it to any business.
Yeah.
You look at every business we set up to do what we love. In a business,
everybody's got their pit stop moment. Mm.
Yeah, and it's just looking at what that understanding. Why did I set my business up? Whatever it was to do, it is a process.
Yeah.
And it's just looking at that and understanding. So it's almost like learning to see the process.
Yeah, I suppose the thing is, like, you've been to a place like restaurants, coffee shops, some are just fantastic at what they do. It's very, you sit down, you get this, and then that comes, and that comes, and then, there's moments when they come and ask you things and that, whereas other places you go to, you sit around.
Notice the difference. If you see the dance of McDonald's versus, like, a random restaurant that's, just... people do what they need to do when they think they need to do it. It's not nothing the same, is it?
And process is, they've always done the process, but there may be within that process, there will be inefficiencies.
Yeah.
And inefficiencies cost money. The customer, the client, isn't paying for those inefficiencies. If you've got as an example, a document that has lots and lots of check boxes on it, lots of information. Have you ever thought, do I really need all of this information?
Yeah.
Because the client, the customer isn't paying for that. So just looking at that information, looking at the flow of information, looking at the process, particularly if it crosses through various departments.
Capturing the information twice, things like that.
Yeah. Exactly. And again, if you have a set process in place, if you understand it, as a business owner, you don't need to know the actual nitty-gritty down to the finer details.
Yeah.
But particularly if a process crosses through various areas of your business, from sales to the warehouse or to the front of office, back of office, etc., where there are different people involved. If you don't have a clear view on that, you lose the accountability of who's actually responsible for doing
that
job.
So who are some of the companies you're working with? Like, who are some of the people you're working with now, and what are some of the results, just so people get a feel for it?
I've worked with IT companies in terms of just, again, looking at their process. What is it from the time a client brings up, or emails, or an inquiry from the web comes in, and an understanding of the tracking of the, from the, from the help desk to the final problem, the solution, in terms of how do we track that in terms of billing a client. There was no way to do that, so we set that up, and there's some sorted us. Every inquiry that came in now goes through the help desk rather than just a phone call. It's put through the help desk. Finance company looking at loan documentation. How relevant is, you know, there's obviously, companies have to be compliant. So by looking at your process, you understand what that, it gives you an understanding of what that compliance is and what you need to do, as well as what the company, as a business owner, what they desire of the company. A web designer, web developer, again, allowed that the business owner to outsource, to identify tasks that they didn't like to do.
Yeah.
We could quantify those, and that allowed the business owner to outsource, which she's managed to do now. And she has two part-time people that come in and work for her, which has allowed her to focus on what she loves to do.
So how did you, 2.5 years ago, you go, okay, got the business cards, I've identified, I'm going to do networking. What other sorts of things have you done to get customers and grow the business?
There are many different ways to do it. As I say, going from an employee to my own business, there's a whole lot of skills, new skills to learn, and marketing, there are various types of marketing.
Yep.
So I've put a Facebook page now, so it's what's involved in that. Just keeping that up to date. There's using, so that whole social media thing, Google AdWords, I'm moving into that space. But what I found with my business, because it's a service industry, people want to get to meet you first. You have to build up that. You have to build up that relationship, because the relationship. Once you build the relationship, it builds trust.
Before they trust your advice, they need to trust you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they want, so from my perspective, a website is a good tool, and you need a website. But it's almost having met the person at a networking event or at a face to face. Okay. Yeah. I've parallel process. Gavin.
Yeah.
I'll go and Google, look on, and it acts as a secondary check. Okay, so that's who he is, that's what he does.
Yeah.
But ultimately, networking is my...
Yeah.
I believe that that's where the drive will come, and through networking, through referrals.
Yeah, and from people understanding what you do, and then going, oh, we could use that, or, you know, I was at something and someone said they're having a lot of trouble with this, and they can refer you on, which is... What it's all
especially
about.
People don't always know that a solution exists to the problem. So, because what you do is kind of uniquely specialized, they don't know, oh, I can Google like process improvement consultant or something, or whatever they might think imagine that you might be available. They don't even know that you exist. And so you've really, those conversations where you say, oh, this is the kind of thing I do. It's like, oh, really? Like, you can help with that? Sort of.
And that's how the business basically came to be set up.
Yeah.
I started going to networking events to look to become an employee again. And that was it. And when I was talking to people, what do you do? Learning business improvement, looking at business processes. It was striking a chord in basically everybody I met. They alluded to the fact, well, I could actually use something.
Yeah.
Someone like you.
But I'm not looking for an employee, I just want someone who can come in and
troubleshoot
up. Put the Bunsen burner on it.
Yeah, there was an acknowledgement that I need that, but then what?
Yes.
So then it's that building the relationship, and literally there wasn't anybody that I didn't meet that couldn't use my skills and services. Even in the smallest way. I mean, and I still meet people today, and they say, "Yeah, I've got this sorted out, and that's pretty good." and then I'll just say something about, well, yeah. who answers your phone?
Yeah.
Well, I do. But is, I understand, you know, if you work on your own, but you know, let's have a look at that. Let's see if we could put something together that allows you to have a virtual assistant.
Yep.
Because the value of your time against multiplied by the number of phone calls,
when someone
rings
Virgin, Richard Branson doesn't answer the
phone.
So. It's very hard to get him on the phone.
Well, you can get him on the phone, but it costs, I don't know how many thousands of dollars.
One of the good things from this podcast is that if people are thinking process improvement, they'll immediately think of the Beach Business Breakfast.
Yes.
And they'll type it in there and they'll find you.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing.
And again, it's a meeting up for a coffee for an hour doesn't cost anything.
It's learning
to see. Sort of thing that can be a slow burn too. Like, people aren't necessarily going to go, yeah, I have this problem, come and fix it tomorrow. That might sit on their mind for 6 months until it really starts to piss them off.
And
then they're like, oh, come on, Gavin, come on.
Yeah.
And it's not about fixing everything in one go, because it can seem big and scary.
Incremental improvement.
You know, let's not try and boil the ocean. Let's just look at the process, step out of the process, and look at, you know, as a business owner, you know what's your pain point, that Sunday afternoon, Monday morning feeling of,
what keeps you up at night?
Because that thought, that feeling, is embedded, is part of the process.
Yep.
And we can work, absolutely, we can work that out and understand that. There's a huge, it's opportunity. It's not that something's wrong. Mm. Something's not working as it should be. That's an opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's good. So, Gavin, thanks for coming in. We're sort of out of time, so that was good. We'll have to get you back
for another
one.
Excellent,
thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just remember, Gavin can help with process improvement, and come along to the Beach Business Breakfast third Thursday of every month at Merriweather Surf Club Function Room. Plenty of activity around here, like always. So $10 gets you great networking, and you can be in our newsletter, do a podcast, be in our directory, hopefully get some more customers. So thanks again. Thanks for coming in, and
thank
have
you.
A great day. And thanks again, Jeremy. And
thanks very much.
We'll see you all soon.